And Marcelo, here's what he said, and I believe your viewers, if or listeners, if they aren't already aware of it, will have the same tingling, shocking feeling I had. Yes, I had the SOB, son of a bitch, killed. I'm glad I did. I'm sorry I couldn't have done it myself. I had the son of a bitch killed, referring to Jack Kennedy. I had the son of a bitch killed. I'm glad I did. I'm sorry that I couldn't have done it myself.
This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world.
Abuse of power. What does that mean to the America of 2025, 2026? A lot, because we live in the consequences of an abuse of power that began way back in the 1960s and has remained present and central to the reality of the American experience ever since. Today we have with us Mark Shaw, a legendary researcher into the Kennedy situation and the Kennedy assassinations, both of JFK and RFK. Can we ever find closure? Mark, welcome to Dreamland.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Your new book, Abuse of Power, which came out on December the 2nd, is, speaking of power, it's very powerful. I think you've nailed it. So let's get into this. I think you start by talking about Dorothy Kilgallen in chapter one. And I've always been interested in what happened to her, because I have personal reason to believe she was murdered. And I think you think she was too. You
Yes.
tell us a little bit about that situation and how she became entangled in this in the first place.
Yeah, it's rather remarkable for me, because I was not going to get involved in writing about any of this with regard to the assassinations or anything like that. My curiosity began when I was an attorney in San Francisco with a famous lawyer named Melvin Belli, who became Jack Ruby's attorney. But I didn't even know that. I shared an office with him. And I started learning about Mr. Belli's contacts with the mafia and wanting to be a mafia wannabe, going to Las Vegas and hanging around them and all that. And so when Belli died in 1996, I decided to write a biography of him, Melvin Belli, King of the Courtroom, and I did. And I learned then about his, affiliation with those underworld people, and it got me to wondering about the 1960 election. And so the first book I wrote was called The Poison Patriarch, about the Kennedys, in my opinion at least, going ahead and fixing the 1960 election, using some underworld characters to win West Virginia and Illinois. And they did help, and JFK did get in the White House. But there was a promise there that if they helped, they would leave those guys alone when JFK took office. So in that interview process, and you've had this happen too, something comes across that you didn't expect, and it just shocks you, and you can't leave it alone. While interviewing one of Belli's best friends, a doctor down in San Diego, he said to me, "Well, Melvin Belli knew Dorothy Kilgallen." And I said, "Who's that?" Because I did not remember her. My family, we may have watched What's My Line before, but I don't remember that. So I said, "Who's that?" He said, "Well, you don't know anything about her, Mark. She was a college dropout, got an internship with her father, who was a famous reporter, the first one to expose the Dachau prison camp during World War II, at the New York Evening Journal, it was called then. She then was this youngster who tried to get them to take her seriously. She had to overcome gender discrimination, some sexual discrimination, and all of that. And she started in writing articles, and then she'd have to write them again, and so on and so forth that way. I found out all this when I finally was able to find any information about her, because when she died in 1965, she just disappeared from the face of the earth. So I looked into that, and then I found out she was really interested in crime reporting. And she went ahead and she covered some murders in New York City. She went to an execution at Sing Sing Prison, all of that. And then the first case she wanted to work on was the doctor, excuse me, the Charles Lindbergh baby kidnapping case. But they wouldn't let her. She was a woman. She couldn't possibly handle that. Well, she went to the trial anyway. And I always remember the first time that I saw she sat directly behind the accused. And he wasn't supposed to talk to anybody, but he talked to her. She got a little snip from that. And then she was able to at least participate some in that case. So you move ahead a little bit, and she started looking at different criminal cases. And the next one was the Dr. Sam Shepard case in 1954. People will remember that case because it was a famous doctor in Ohio who supposedly killed his wife, and a surgeon and his wife. And that particular case became The Fugitive, which was a television show and all of that, and the movie and everything. Well, she went to that trial in 1954. And if people want to see more about Dorothy and what was the first thing that really hit me when I started looking into that case, they can go to the DorothyKilgallenStory.org. I have all the material up there about Dorothy, all to the present day. But there is a photograph there where she is standing in the middle of the courtroom, and all these reporters are circling her out of admiration for Dorothy. And that really set me off in starting to write about her. And I learned about it growing up in Chicago and then Manhattan and then her early years. And finally, this friend of Bella, I said, "Mark, come on." She was the most famous panelist on the show What's My Line on CBS. It was shown every Sunday night in Sunday night at 10 o'clock live. She had a newspaper column called Voice of Broadway that covered not only Broadway and the entertainment business, but famous trials that she wrote for the New York Journal American, which it became. And it was read by 200,000 people every day through the Hearst Syndicate. Now, that's an amazing amount of money. Back then, they did actually read the newspaper. But that was the case. She had a radio program with her husband, Dick Calmer, called Breakfast with Dorothy and Dick, listened to by 1 million people every day. And she was just the celebrity. The New York Post called her the most powerful female voice in America. No less than Ernest Hemingway called her the greatest female writer in the world. I mean, she had all of these accolades and everything. And I'm going to stop right there because I think it's important for you to know, if you don't, that Dorothy never got much of a tribute to her through the years until my books, The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, and then the other books were published. But a week ago Saturday in New York City, on November 8th, the 60th anniversary of her death, the New York City Council co-named a street after Dorothy at East 68th Street and Park Avenue, Dorothy Kilgallen Way. And my health isn't the
Well,
best, but I would have crawled back there to be at that ceremony. People
yeah,
can look
that's
at articles on
wonderful.
the internet by Sue Edelman at the New York Post. There's a video of what took place, and so I spoke and others did. And that was a tribute because Dorothy lived at 45 East 68th Street. So she finally got some of her due there. And I think you were going to comment on that, so please go ahead.
I'm certainly glad to hear that she got something. Some notice, and it's nice that it was right in front of her where she lived. I have walked past that place a number of times in my life. I've been very interested in her because of what she said to friends when she came back from interviewing Jack Ruby, that she had cracked the Kennedy case. And then she dies mysteriously, and the manuscript disappears.
Perfect. Exactly.
Now,
I do want to mention, if I may, I know that you apparently are somebody who believes in the paranormal and other kinds of things happening. I have no question in my mind, and sometimes my wife tells me I get in trouble because people think I'm crazy. But the moment that I latched on to writing about Dorothy Kilgallen, I could feel her presence at times. And over the years, with the now six, seven books I've written about the JFK assassination, her life and times, and Robert Kennedy now, I felt her nudging me to find new evidence. And her picture's right up here on the wall. Over in the corner here of our home is the sign that we were given, Dorothy Kilgallen Way. So she has really been an incredible influence on me, because when I would look for more evidence and everything, I really tried to follow the path, especially with the JFK assassination, that Dorothy she had with her journey. And I think that's why I've been able to present more and more new facts about what happened in 1963. Of course, Dorothy unfortunately died in 1965. We can talk about that. But she's been a huge influence for me, no question about that.
Yeah, I think she's an important figure in this country and in certainly in this whole story. And she knew the secrets. Is it true that the manuscript of her book she gave to a friend and then it disappeared, the friend died, or is that an old wives' tale?
Not exactly what happened. So Dorothy, if we can just switch now, she had covered all these trials, and then she and JFK were very close friends. He had been to her home on that east on East 50, on East 68th Street, played charades and everything. I have an account from a producer at CBS who said one night they were there together at her home, and the phone rang. It was John Kennedy. How you doing? And had a nice talk and everything. So she was a very close friend of his. The other thing that was big in Dorothy's life at that time was that the president invited her to come to the White House, and she did, and she took her young son Kerry with her, and JFK came into the library, praised Kerry for bringing letters from his third grade class, gave him a PT-109 pen, all those kinds of things. And made a big fuss over Kerry, and that meant so much to her. In fact, the first column that she wrote after she and Kerry watched, the assassination and all of that was, "What I remember is a tall man stooping over a small boy, praising his letters from the third grade class. That is the man who was killed in Dallas," and immediately she went there. And unlike so many so-called experts out there about the assassination, including me, we weren't there. Dorothy was there. So she started writing these columns about the JFK assassination. She interviewed Jess Curry. She interviewed Archer, who was in the cell with Jack Ruby after he was arrested. I mean, she really did her homework, and that's one of the things that I really admired about her. And then, of course, she wrote these columns and so on and so forth. And all the time, she was criticizing the Oswald alone theory, which brought
Right.
enemies to her doorstep. And now, as you get to the early part of 1965, she's already exposed Jack Ruby's testimony before the Warren Commission, before it was supposed to be released. She's got these enemies lining up. And Jack Ruby, when she interviewed him, and I have proven this, I believe, really let her know exactly how he was involved in the JFK assassination. And where did he send her? He didn't send her to Dallas to look at the LBJ. He didn't send her to DC to look in the CIA. He sent her to New Orleans. And that's where this mafia don, Carlos Marcello, operated. And you have to go back to what happened in 1963, because as I said, when the mafia, when Joe Kennedy made a deal with the mafia, it was if they helped JFK become president, they'd leave him alone. Well, the first thing that Bobby Kennedy did as Attorney General was deport Carlos Marcello to Central America. When he got back in the United States, then they charged him with conspiracy, racketeering, and all of that. And so what I've been able to show is that here's Marcello. He has a huge empire with all of the illegal activities, and he's got to say to himself, "Look, I can't have Bobby Kennedy coming after me anymore." So he's able to orchestrate his empire stretched out to Dallas, orchestrate, I believe, a common sense, logical journey in terms of how this all happened. He orchestrates JFK death so Bobby Kennedy is powerless. And that's exactly what happened. Bobby Kennedy never went after him. When we talk about Robert Kennedy, his assassination in 68 will connect that. But Dorothy then was writing this book for Random House. And unfortunately, where you're talking about the friend of hers, she shared some of her manuscript with that person. It was a romantic interest of her at the time because she was estranged from her husband. And unfortunately, he was compromised by the Marcello people who knew about some of his gambling debts and things like that. And so when Dorothy got back from New Orleans, she said the following: if the wrong people knew what I know about the assassination, it would cost me my life. My life's been threatened. I bought a gun, and I'm going to crack this case open. And it wasn't too long after that that the word got out about this book and so on and so forth. And then she died mysteriously on November 8th, 1965.
And the questions remain.
Excuse me, and the manuscript and her notes about the assassination, there was a raid on her apartment, those vanished. I've tried to find them everywhere, and so far, no luck.
Yeah, of course there's no luck, because that's exactly, she was killed for them. And they were taken, and goodness knows who, because you get into a very fuzzy area as to where the mafia starts and the FBI ends and the CIA. It's a very tangled web. But let's go back to his name. I'm blocking on the name of the mafia guy in
Carlos Marcello.
Marcellus. Yes.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Marcellus was the Kennedy family. From Joe Kennedy was deeply involved in the mafia, and not necessarily in the mafia in New Orleans, but in the mafia in general during the bootlegging era. Joe Kennedy is the model for the Great Gatsby, and so the Kennedys also owed. The mafia felt like they owed them their position in the world, and that they had put them in the White House, as you said earlier. And now suddenly, Bobby Kennedy is beating the drums to put them all in jail. So, of course, they were upset.
Well, what Bobby Kennedy did, he always wanted to be important. And so he wrote this book. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you this, the enemy within, it's all about, the mafia and so on and so forth. But he could have gone ahead and just name names, evidence with regard to everything. But just imagine how these guys felt when he wrote. They have the look of Al Capone's men. They are sleek, often bilious, and fat, or lean and cold and hard. They have the smooth faces and cruel eyes of gangsters. They wear the same rich clothes, the diamond ring, the jeweled watch, the strong, sickly, sweet-smelling perfume. Now you can imagine how the mafia, who had just put JFK in the White House, felt about this book. And that hatred, you can't mess around with those guys, as you know. I had some experiences with that I can give you about dealing with the mafia. Who is it? Nick Pileggi, who wrote Wise Guy and some other books and everything, who's given me some endorsements for my book and the new one, Abuse of Power, said, most of those mafia people, the Sicilians especially, their middle name is revenge. And you cannot go ahead and that kind of language, for sure, that's just fire for them coming after somebody like Bobby Kennedy. That's who they wanted to kill. But Marcello believed that by killing JFK, Bobby would be powerless, and that's what happened. So, yeah, I think we both realize that, Joe was, a lot of Joe's success was due to some of that help he got from them. And then they just turned their back on Marcello and the rest of them when they got in the White House.
Yeah, not only Joe's success, but JFK's success. He wouldn't have been in the White House without them.
Right.
Absolutely not. And it was a profound betrayal, because Bobby was out to destroy them, to destroy the very people who had given him, his brother, the prize of prizes on planet Earth, presidency of the United States of America, and empowered Bobby. And what does he do? He comes, turns around and comes after them. So, of course, there was a problem. Now, when we get back, we're going to talk more about Sirhan Sirhan and what has happened here, because something is very, very wrong. And as you know, folks, the abuse of power is still going on right now in the Epstein case, when we're in this situation where the administration is openly whitewashing or sanitizing the Epstein files before they're released. So it doesn't end. It's not ended. This is still going on. We'll be right back. We're talking to Mark Shaw, his new book, Powerful, Devastating Abuse of Power, about the truth about the RFK assassination and what happened. And the abuse of power didn't end with the Kennedys because it was successful. It's become ingrained in American politics, and it's still happening right now. And it's happening to you and to me and to Mark and all of us. We've got to stand up to it. Okay, Mark, we've talked a bit about the Kennedy assassination and Dorothy Kilgallen and all of the mysteries associated with that. And it's pretty clear that he was assassinated by the mafia. Now, before we go on to RFK and Sirhan Sirhan, I think we've got to talk about the first lie that worked, which, of course, is Oswald. Oswald, tell us a little bit about Oswald and how he ended up holding the bag.
Yeah, and it's most interesting. I was not going to write this new book, and I think people will be fascinated with some of the new information in there. And I'd like for them, when they read it, to do what we need to do, what needed to be done back in the 60s and what needs to be done today, and that's ask questions. You cannot take for granted what the government tells you in any way, especially today. And we'll talk about this task force on government secrets, but you know, they were supposed to also investigate the Epstein case, and they haven't at all. So we really, I think people have lost faith in the government. But what happened back then is that, well, in fact, what's happened since this new book does one thing it's never been done. I've connected the deaths of Marilyn Monroe, 62, JFK, 63, Dorothy, 65, and now Robert Kennedy, 68. And when you do that, you get a real different perspective of what happened, both with the JFK assassination, Dorothy's death, and with RFK's. But let's talk about this. You know as well as I do what a mafia hit is. And what happens with that is, as an expert told me, and I put this in the book, they never commit the crime themselves. They find somebody that can commit the crime. And the best thing they can do is find somebody who's a patsy. Because what that does is, and Marcello was an expert in that, I've connected him several ways with Oswald in New Orleans and otherwise. I know there are all these people out there that want to talk this about the CIA, but it was Marcello who had the arrangement with Oswald to be able to go to Dallas and so on and so forth that way. So there is that connection, and Oswald is the kind of person, when I talk about Sirhan Sirhan, you're going to see similarities there, because Oswald was easily manipulated. There are all kinds of things about Oswald that we could go into, and he was the perfect one to go ahead. Now, let me just explain right now. When Dorothy got to Dallas and she looked into Oswald, she didn't believe for a minute that he acted alone. And that's when she started writing all these columns that are in the book. People are fascinated with 8 or 9 columns. The Oswald file must not close, da 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 da. That's what she put in the New York Journal American. So now you go to Dorothy's death, And there's this guy named Ron Pataki who is a love interest, has gambling debts, easily compromised, and so on and so forth. And so Marcello cannot let her publish that tell-all book for Random House, even though, because he knows that he's going to be, she's already talked about it in her columns and stuff. He's the one who's going to be held responsible, in her opinion. So you've got him as a patsy. Now you move on to Sirhan Sirhan. Now, I was not going to write about this because everybody else in the world has. But what happened is, and I know you'll be interested in this. Sirhan was always looked upon as Sirhan alone, like it was Oswald alone. And I'd always been suspicious of that. And so one day, I started to tell myself I was going to look into what happened with Robert Kennedy, because here was Carlos Marcello, who wanted to have Robert Kennedy killed in 63, but he didn't. He didn't. He had JFK assassinated. Now, what does he know? Robert Kennedy may very well be what? The next president of the United States. He's just won the California primary. He's on his way, and Marcello cannot let that happen. So I thought, can I connect, and people will be interested, I think, in how I did this, Marcello to Sirhan Sirhan. And through one of Marcello's thugs in California, Mickey Cohen, a racketeer out there, I was able to show that Sirhan Sirhan, and people can go into the internet and look up, or go into the book and get the link to an interview with a man named John Scheer, who was a paddock captain at Santa Anita Racetrack outside of Los Angeles, controlled by Mickey Cohen, Marcello's buddy. And you will see that Scheer goes ahead and talks about that one day this very shy guy walks into the paddock and says, "I need a job." And Scheer says, "Well, we only have hot walkers. It's $200 a month." And this guy says, "I'll take it." And then he was around that racetrack for several months and then a couple years. And finally, then, just before RFK was killed in 1968, I've been able to show that Scheer saw him at Hollywood Park in the accompaniment of a couple hombres. This is a videotaped interview with John Scheer, and being controlled by them just a few days before Robert Kennedy was killed. And then I take that thread of evidence and show that days later, John Scheer and his wife were at Hollywood Park and they saw Sirhan Sirhan there again, and they wondered what happened. And then, of course, on the LA television station, they had a picture of the mugshot of Sirhan. And do you know this man? And John Scheer then called the authorities at Hollywood Park. The FBI and the LAPD knew about it and gave him the information that he had, including one particular piece of evidence that has never been presented before. And so I had that information. And one thing that we should mention: Sirhan Sirhan had gambling debts, so he was easily compromised as well. So you've got a pattern there that I've established in the new book of Oswald, this Ron Pataki and Dorothy's death, and then Sirhan Sirhan. And I'm going to do everything I can to get this new material to the Los Angeles District Attorney and see if we can't get Sirhan a new trial.
Well, that he certainly seems to deserve a new trial, because, of course, then that leaves the question open. You know, murder doesn't have there's no statute of limitations on murder. So then we go back to looking into who did this and who did the Kennedy murder. I mean, the JFK murder, because these murders are still open cases, it seems to me. Now, it's probable that whoever actually pulled the triggers, and mostly are dead by now, but maybe not. And in any case, it leaves me to the question of who did pull the triggers, who was there with the
And
guns.
you said whoever may have pulled the trigger may not be there, but there may be people who were there.
Yeah, exactly.
As you know, I'm a former criminal defense lawyer. I always look at motive, okay? Who had the strongest motive to have killed, to have had JFK killed? Marcello. Who had the strongest motive to have had Dorothy Kilgallen silenced? Marcello. Who had the strongest motive to have had Robert Kennedy assassinated. And I will tell you right now that I hope your viewers will be like other ones who have watched my presentations on shows, and especially up on YouTube. There's about 15 million views of them up there, because they get in touch with me. And much of my evidence over the years has come from tips from around the world. And some of them are so screwy, when I first hear from them, I just can't understand, you know, how what they're telling me could be possible. I think you'll get a kick out of one example. Do you know who James Tagg is?
No.
Okay, so I'm trying to figure out exactly what happened in Daley Plaza and all the shots and where they came from. Dorothy had talked to Jesse Curry, the police chief, and he told her the shots came from the grassy knoll or up near the overpass and all of that. But then this gentleman gets in touch with me. Mr. Shaw, do you know that somebody else was shot in Daley Plaza other than JFK? And I know my wife was watching, and I must have gone, what? Because what? Okay. So this guy got in touch with me. He lived in the Netherlands now. But he said, Mr. Shaw, I just want to talk to you. You can record what I said. I was in Daley Plaza on the day that this happened. And I met a gentleman named James Tagg, who was standing on the curb at the moment when JFK was shot. And I looked over at him, and he had a trickle of blood down his cheek and on his sleeve of his shirt. And he was looking down at the curb. And I said, well, what did this gentleman tell you, James Tagg? He said, somebody shot me. And I believe that the bullet or bullets came from the grassy knoll or wherever that way. So I did my homework then after. He said, I know I don't think there's any accounts of this, but I'll be glad to give you my account. But I said, let me do some research. So I did. And you know where I found this? The account was in the Dallas Morning News. There was an account of that in the Dallas Morning News that Tagg had been shot as well. That did filter over into the Warren Commission, but unfortunately they just dismissed it. They finally interviewed him, but it was never a big deal because all they were looking for was Oswald alone. So it's amazing to me, and I hope your viewers, my website's markshawbooks.com. My email is mshawin@yahoo.com. And let me know, because I think you're right. I think there are more people out there, and I hear from some every week or so, who have new information. And I think we're right that the shooter, probably those people are long gone. But there are people who know about this. Now, I will tell you that recently I've had some people get in touch with me, but they're too scared to talk about this. This is what, 60 years ago or whatever? I mean,
yeah, it's not over.
No, and so they're scared. They won't talk to me. And I've said, you know, I can protect you. Use another name. No, they will know. It's just unfortunate. But what people have to do out there these days with regard to anything that comes from the government, including this task force, and let's talk about, if we may, what I've discovered.
We're going to take a break just before this, and now we're going to getting into a major discovery here, because remember, folks, you probably haven't read the book, but I have. I know what he's getting ready to tell us about abuse of power.
You know where I'm headed.
We'll be right back with Mark Shaw. We're talking to Mark Shaw, Abuse of Power, his website, markshawbooks.com. It's
mshawin@yahoo.com.
Okay, mshawin@yahoo.com. If you've got anything, any tips for Mark,
please
go ahead and write him, no matter how crazy they seem. He'll look into it. All right, now, let's go right on, Mark, if you will.
Sure. Well, you know, all these years, I've been criticized, you know, right and left. It wasn't Marcello alone. Marcello that orchestrated JFK's death. It's the CIA. It's the Russians. It's Lyndon Johnson. It's all these people. You know, Mark, you don't have enough evidence and everything else like that. So, at the first of the year, we had the JFK assassination records release. And I was fascinated to know what was going to be in there. Well, unfortunately, as you may know, an awful lot of the material was redacted. I still don't think we have all the records at all, just like we're not going to get them with the Epstein case, as you mentioned. So I started looking at that, and one day I saw an account on a website where it said, you know, not only are the JFK assassination records not being fully released, there's some missing FBI files, about 2,000 of them. And I looked there, and one of them said, the Carlos Marcelo confession. And I tracked that down, and it's in abuse of power. And basically, what it is an FBI file where they were, it deals with a sting that was happening in 1968. Let's see, no, 1986 in Texas. Carlos Marcelo was in prison based on his being convicted of bribing, I believe, a juror or something else that happened in federal prison. And I came to find out that the FBI wanted to get information about him with the JFK assassination. So they put a stooge in there named Jack Van Lanningham. His background and everything will fascinate people. Convicted of robbery of a bank using, I think it was a laundry sack that he said that he had a bomb in or whatever. Anyway, I've found not only this confession, but corroborative evidence of exactly why this account of his confession, Marcelo's, is accurate. And Marcelo, here's what he said, and I believe your viewers, if their listeners, if they aren't already aware of it, will have the same tingling, shocking feeling I had. Yes, I had the SOB, son of a bitch, killed. I'm glad I did. I'm sorry I couldn't have done it myself. I had the son of a bitch killed, referring to Jack Kennedy. I had the son of a bitch killed. I'm glad I did. I'm sorry that I couldn't have done it myself.
Boy,
so that
that's
just
hard.
hit me like a rock, because it really validates my research in the other books over the years and everything else like that. And so I was able to go ahead then and go back and connect up a lot of the material about Marcelo that I hadn't found before that would really make a difference with regard to connecting him in there. So that really changes everything about the assassination. Now, what was really interesting to me, though, is that I went ahead and was able to look at this a little bit different in the perspective of what happened with Robert Kennedy as well, so that I got a new picture that people will learn about in the book of exactly what happened with those three deaths. But with the Marcelo confession, here's the situation. I think you probably know about the task force. I always get the wrong name up. The task force on the declassification of federal secrets that was
Yes.
convened early in the year to look into JFK, RFK, MLK, and Jeffrey Epstein, as a matter of fact. So I was excited with that was going to happen. So I got in touch with Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna, and I said, and I sent her some letters, and I said, here's my evidence about these matters. I believe it's worthy. I want to contribute to your investigation, and so on and so forth. I even had a conversation with her about that and let her know about the Marcelo confession. So I said, you know, when you're having these hearings, I would be glad to appear, and so on and so forth that way. Well, here's what happened so far. Number one, they have never mentioned the Marcelo confession in any of the documents that they've released, and that is one of the most important. Second, I've never been contacted. They've ignored Dorothy's evidence. They basically have taken the word of a researcher named Jefferson Morley, who is obsessed with the CIA and Oswald, and it's like the task force, unfortunately, is the Warren Commission all over again. It's very disappointing, because I expected that we were really going to get some answers here. In fact, Congresswoman Luna finally said, look, I want everybody to know we're going to expose all these documents that have been hidden for years, but we are not going to go ahead and be able to pinpoint who assassinated the president. And Morley the other day said, when he was asked on a podcast by Joe Rogan, or learned about a podcast by Joe Rogan, where are we with learning about the JFK assassination? And he had the audacity to say, we're getting warmer. After 2 years, they're getting warmer. Well, you can get hot and leave warmer alone if you bring about the Carlos Marcelo confession, and then you take that material and just branch it all out. And that's gonna give people the American people a real feeling for what happened back there instead of just kicking the can down the way or giving them a lot of BS in terms of what happened. So I'm hopeful, and I'm going to keep after it, that the task force, there was an audio tape of the confession. Okay, I want to make sure I mention that. It has been sealed in the Texas court. Another colleague and I have been trying to get it, and also, supposedly, Congresswoman Luna is trying to get it. But I don't think she's really trying, because she has all that power and everything, and unfortunately, I don't think she wants to see it exposed, because it goes again against what they've been talking about with the CIA and Oswald, even though Morley has admitted there's no direct evidence of either one being involved in the JFK assassination. These things drive me crazy, okay?
Yeah, I can imagine. It'll drive me crazy just listening to it, because, you know, you could get to the truth, but they won't let you go there. That's incredibly frustrating, and it's been the case all ever since the beginning of this, and you have to wonder why the mafia is being protected so carefully. How deep does it go, Mark?
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. It's just outlandish that that's happened. J. Edgar Hoover knew that Marcello was involved in the JFK assassination, but he protected Marcello because he wanted it to be Oswald alone, no plot, no conspiracy, no nothing. Then you get to the Dorothy Kilgallen death, and there was no investigation of her death, even though she died in mysterious circumstances, bed she never slept in, makeup, eyelashes, all that on, a book on her lap she already read. The medical examiner went ahead and said she overdosed. No investigation whatsoever. And in the new book, people will be outraged at what I found out about the medical examiner's office at that particular time, the corruption there, and how they covered up exactly what happened. And the link to Marcello is the fact that I have an eyewitness who worked at the medical examiner's office who talked about the fact that most of the people who worked there were Sicilians, and that they were covering up the truth about all kinds of homicides and things like that. So, you know, even today now, I know you recently have seen where this gambling, scandal goes into the mafia in terms of fixing basketball games and baseball games and
Right.
stuff like that. They're still out there. How do we know what they're not doing with this president government? What do they have on the president? What do they have on other major figures? Because I'm telling you right now, they're still active out there, and they have huge influence on what's happening to our country these days.
Yeah, and their presence has become very hidden. Back in the day, the mafia was a major source of public interest. The mafia was very interesting to the public.
Yeah, they were.
It's, yeah, I mean, back in the days of the Godfather and so forth, but that has quietly gone by the wayside. Well, we don't have any films like that anymore. We don't have anybody talking about the mafia very much.
Oh.
And that's is to say it's become powerful enough to control its public exposure.
Excellent.
And
Excellent.
That is the truth of it. We're going to take our last break right now. And when we get back, we're going deep into the question of what to do about, is there anything to do about Sirhan Sirhan? What do we do here? How do we get out of this trap that we, the American people, have
Good.
Been in since the first bullet hit President John F. Kennedy?
Well said, well said, well said.
Yeah, we'll be right back. We're talking to Mark Shaw, his explosive new book, Abuse of Power. You can reach Mark at markshawbooks.com. He's on it. Give your email address again. I want to get it exactly right.
M. Shaw, IN, at Yahoo.
Okay, mshawin at yahoo.com.
Yes,
if you've
sir.
got anything for Mark, send him an email. Now, you can easily send it anonymously. It's not hard to do that. So set up a cover email address if you have to. In any case, His new book, Abuse of Power, is explosive and it's important. Now, what we have a man here in jail. If they release him, they have to say, we don't know who killed RFK, therefore the investigation is still open, and that's going to be a big problem.
Right.
Now, Robert Kennedy Jr., he shared your belief that the wrong man was in prison. Is that correct?
Yes, and it's interesting. Robert Kennedy Jr. over the years has advocated Sirhan Sirhan. One of the quotes by Robert Kennedy Jr., which I admire, was he said, we don't want the wrong man in prison for this. And then I found some new quotes that are in the book. One of them was that when he visited Sirhan in 2017 in the prison here in California, hugged him, man, and said, I know you were not involved with my father's death. There are other quotes by him. So you ask, how are we going to get something done here? And this is where your listeners could help. I have just been working on a letter to Robert Kennedy Jr., who you know is in the government now. And
right.
I have sent to him, I'm going to send to him my evidence with regard to Sirhan Sirhan and what I found out about his being used, him being a patsy, and so on and so forth with all of that. And I'm going to ask him to join me because I've also written a letter to the Los Angeles District Attorney. I think that's the place to start with this, setting out the evidence that I have. And it's alarming when you see it, because when Sirhan was arrested, and as a former criminal defense lawyer, this would have driven me nuts. When he was arrested, right away they believed he was guilty. They gave him public defenders, and then he had two attorneys that represented him. One was a guy named Cooper, who had represented a gangster named Johnny Roselli, who was a compatriot of Carlos Marcello. They were representing this guy. And finally, all the confusion went on. There was a trial. He confessed and so on and so forth. And he really never had a fair trial whatsoever at that particular point. Over the years, there have been parole hearings. There finally was actually a parole hearing where the parole board believed and said that he should be paroled. But the governor of California botched that deal. So I think the place to start, and if people want to, after they read the book, if they believe what I believe, that he was not complicit in Robert Kennedy's death, then they could get a hold of the district attorney as well. The other thing that I've presented in the new book is forensic evidence about how Robert Kennedy was killed, and the fact that, as you may know, if I'm Robert Kennedy, okay, Sirhan Sirhan is right in front of me, all right? Sirhan did have a gun. I think they gave him a gun to bring into the Ambassador Hotel, which was controlled by Marcello's buddy, Mickey Cohen. I proved that in the book. People will be interested in that. So if Sirhan's right here, Robert Kennedy's here. Well, Robert Kennedy was shot in the back and the neck. Now, the people get around that by saying that Robert Kennedy may have swiveled a bit this way or whatever that way. But I have new forensic evidence in there that completely shows that it was almost virtually impossible that Sirhan could have shot Robert Kennedy. And it also comes down to the bullets, because there were 13 bullets that were fired in the Ambassador Hotel there. And Sirhan had a gun that had 8 in them. So there's all, and the Noguchi, even the autopsy of Robert Kennedy, said it was impossible that this could have happened. But this is what happens when the focus begins on one person and stays there with illegal evidence or whatever it may be, insinuation, speculation, or whatever. Happened with JFK's death, he was denied justice. Happened with Dorothy Kilgallen's death, she was denied justice. And now I believe Sirhan Sirhan is being denied justice. And one of the things that I've tried to do, because I believe in this, is to fight for justice for these people. And it's unfortunate that other people don't care. But I hope that some of your listeners out there, or those that read the book, will care. And all it would take would be a letter from them to the Los Angeles District Attorney, Hochman is his name, I believe, Hotchman or Hochman, saying, you know, I support a new trial or a new investigation of Sirhan Sirhan's complicity in Robert Kennedy's death.
You know, the problem is, of course, that the skeletons have been buried, and they're not going to want to dig them up. But the greater problem is the freedom of every single one of us has been buried with those skeletons. We are not free anymore as a people, and we can see that happening all around us, the way the government is changing. And so it's, I want to go now to move on to the LAPD and its role in tagging Sirhan, and what it did in terms of the cover-up, because that would also be of great interest to the LA District Attorney, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. And what I've been able to find is that even though this John Scheer sent, you know, gave his argument to gave his evidence in terms of him knowing about Sirhan and who he was and what his actions were right before the death. You know, there's one, I will give away one fact in the book because I think it's important. Sirhan Sirhan was unemployed, all right? When they arrested him, he had fancy clothes on. But more important there, and I will tell you right now, there's six books here that I've looked at about the Robert Kennedy assassination. John Scheer is never mentioned. And also not mentioned is the fact that Sirhan, maybe you know this, when he was arrested, he had four $100 bills in his pocket. Four, Chris, $100 bills in his pocket. Well, it doesn't take too much imagination to think that those who were compromising him, using as a patsy, a fall guy and everything, that that may have been part of the deal. Nobody has ever been able to figure out how that money got in his pocket. But I believe, if I may pat myself on the back a little bit, because of the John Scheer account and so on and so forth, it's pretty easy to be able to believe that that was connected to whoever put him up to being in that Ambassador Hotel. And I did find a British book written by a guy named Tate, who said, who really alarmed me when I read what he said. He had listened to one of my broadcasts on YouTube, and he said, you know, my friend and I wrote a book and about the Robert Kennedy assassination, and one of the things we found out was that the LAPD knew about the mafia connection to Sirhan Sirhan. So boy, my face was smiling. I contacted the LAPD. I contacted them by letter, and then I went into the LAPD archives where all of the evidence is supposed to be. What do you think happened? Absolutely nothing. I've never had them get back to me. I got a message from the archival people. There's nothing in there about that. You see how that would have changed things if simply the LAPD had tried to put, hey, you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but didn't anybody at that point think about Carlos Marcello having the strongest motive to have killed Robert Kennedy? He hated the guy. And yet, you know, these homicide detectives or whatever, you know, nobody looked into that. Think how that would have changed things if they had just decided to thoroughly investigate that case.
Yeah, well, maybe they didn't want to. Maybe they knew that would not be the right direction to go in. Maybe they knew from the beginning that they were supposed to finger Sirhan Sirhan and ignore this hidden reality. You say you went to into the LAPD archive. Did you actually try to find records, or?
Yes, I did, and then I emailed whoever was in charge of that as to what, you know, might be in there, and I got kind of a you know, a general response. We haven't found anything and stuff like that. I may look into it further before I send this letter to the LA district attorney. Because one of the things I want to say in there, would you please look into this? Because if anybody could find out, you know, what happened there, As far as the files and things go that way, he would be able to do that. Now, you know what? Here's a politician, okay? He's only been in office since the first of the year. Is this something he's going to mess around with? I don't know. But like you, and you do this every time you're on the air, you try to make people stop and think, and you try to see them maybe take action with regard to doing something with a wrongdoing. So we have to try. And all I can do is try to see if I can get something done for Sirhan, and then hopefully he could be released.
Well, folks, this is important because the Epstein cover-up would not be happening if the Kennedy cover-ups had not succeeded. But they did
Excellent.
succeed, and they created a monster that is hidden under our skin, folks. And we got to get in there and get this truth out. Otherwise, we're lost here. This country is lost. It's lost in a miasma of conspiracies and people in high places who figure that they can do anything they damn well please, including killing who they want to kill. And we've got to put a stop to it. This is a good country, in large part. Okay,
It
so
is.
yeah,
It is. But
so okay, go ahead. Now, I want to continue with the records just for a moment. Are you saying they're not there? Did they tell you the records of this case were not present?
the author told me that they had gone ahead and gotten them, and they'd seen them, whatever it was. So I got in touch with him. He's in Great Britain. And then what happened is that all at once he disappeared. So I think he might have been scared in terms of what he put in this book. So then I called the archives. I asked them about this. I went into detail. Okay, send us something. So I sent him in the material. And then, what happens with these cases is that all at once it stops. Now, you know who was looking over the shoulder of the LAPD when Robert Kennedy was dead? Well, that was J. Edgar Hoover. And he wasn't about to let there be any sort of plot to kill Robert Kennedy, just as he wasn't going to be let there be a plot to kill Dorothy or JFK. You are so right, and I want to make sure that your listeners understand this, that our world has changed. Some people say we lost the innocence after JFK was killed. That's a long time
Yes.
ago. But you're right, because a lot of the people that we've talked about today, including Marcello and others, they got away with it. They got away with it. And unfortunately, that's what's happened with Dorothy. That's what happens with Marilyn Monroe's death, other deaths that happen. And now, with Robert Kennedy's, nobody's ever been arrested or probably will ever be arrested, although I still believe there may be people out there who know about it. And if that continues on, and then you've got this Epstein situation where who knows what kind of real information we're getting. You've got the task force not giving us the information that they should. It just makes you shake your head. And I just turned 80 years old. I'm an old guy. But I really worry about the younger people in this country who are facing, as you mentioned, this web of unfortunate happenings in our country that I don't know if they're ever going to be able to get the true facts about it, and that's just unfortunate for sure.
Well, I remember the country as it was before the Kennedy assassination and how profoundly it has changed. And now it's unrecognizable. It doesn't feel like a free country to me anymore. And I find that extremely disturbing. I r really do. Now, I want to get into Hoover a little bit here because he's a strange figure. Here he is, the head of the FBI, and he seems to be bent on, at all costs, preserving a cover-up of two horrendous mafia hits. What was his motive here?
Well, I'm going to take you back a little bit. In the previous book, Fighting for Justice or Collateral Damage, whichever it was, the first one to have found somebody who was a legislative assistant to one of the Warren Commission members, Senator John Sherman Cooper. And in Abuse of Power, you'll see some of his revelations about the corruption at the Warren Commission. But one thing that this man told me that really was disturbing was that when Jack Kennedy was in the White House and Bobby Kennedy was Attorney General, they used to send back and forth, and this gentleman told me he was the courier riding a bicycle between the Justice Department and the White House with these secret messages between the brothers, all right? Now, if that sounds arcane, it just, what? Well, here's the reason why. Because they believe that J. Edgar Hoover had both the president and the attorney general's phones tapped. That's
Well, of
the
course he
power.
would if he could.
That's the power that he had. And they truly believe that. You know, he supposedly had this little black book or big black book or something where he had something on everybody in Washington and everything else. He was so powerful, you know, that he kept his private life private. He was looked upon. He got a building named after him, the JFK or the FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C. I mean, he was a G-man. He was looked upon as a hero and everything. But behind the scenes, you see, and who knows if there's somebody behind the scenes with this administration pulling the strings, because he was able, just immediately after JFK died, he just immediately shouted Oswald alone to the world. And that proclamation, which makes no sense whatsoever, has lasted since then to now. And there are many people out there who still believe that Oswald did act alone. So the power that he had, and there's one more thing I want to mention. I was able to show in the books, a couple of the books, that Reporter Knew Too Much was the first, I believe, that one of Hoover's best friends was mafioso Frank Costello in New York City. And the reason they became friends is because Hoover loved to bet the horses. And he got into trouble in terms of his gambling debts.
Yeah, you've mentioned gambling debts again and again here, folks.
Yeah,
And just
exactly.
So you understand, this is not like credit card debt. Gambling debts are debts to the mafia. You got to pay them.
Absolutely. So Costello ran the racetracks in New York City. And so they would meet in Central Park and talk about this. And one of the quotes that I'll never forget is, listen, I'll take care of these things. But I'll leave you alone, and you leave me alone. So, and there's a lot of connection between Marcello and J. Edgar Hoover, because what you have to do is you have to do it if you're an official with power. This is what bothers me about the task force: is these politicians right now. If you want to be able to continue on distortions of history, as I call them, you have to ignore every single bit of evidence to the contrary. And that's what I'm afraid is going to happen now with Robert Kennedy's death and JFK's death, because they know about the Marcello confession. I've told Congressman Luna about it. I've told Morley about it. They do not want any of that information to come out because it conflicts with the theory that they have. What I'm worried about with the Epstein case is the same thing is going to happen. I can't believe that that Bondi or whatever her name is going to release an awful lot of this material that is going to cause the president problems. We're not going to know about it because people could go to court or whatever. They're going to say, well, we're doing this because we want to, you know, we don't want a lot of material out there about some of the victims and things like that. Well, the victims have already said, we don't give a damn. We don't care what's
right
in there. You go ahead and release all that. But they'll use that excuse, I'm afraid, just as has been done in the other three murders we've talked about, where, you know, the wrongdoing has occurred. And I'm afraid that that's what's going to happen. I think both Republicans and Democrats hopefully are going to say, we want everything here. And if you're not going to give it to us, we're going to go to the courts. We're going to do whatever we can. But they all have their political careers to worry about. So I'm going to try to stay optimistic with it, but I don't know if we're going to get the truth about what happened back then.
Well, you know, I think it's my feeling that the public is simply fed up, and that if this is another
Excellent.
whitewash, they're basically going to throw everybody out of office that was involved, including the president and anyone on either side of the aisle who participated in it. And it's going to be up to people like us to indicate who did it, who helped, who assisted in the cover-up of the truth about Epstein. And another thing about Epstein that everybody seems to forget, what about all the videos and photographs he makes reference to from time to time? They're in Russia. They're in Putin's hands. So is the president himself compromised or not? These are all things we need to look at carefully.
And he really could be. And as, again, I get former criminal defense lawyer, I have a very difficult to believe that Epstein committed suicide. If you know anything about suicides, most of the time these are people who are that's a terrible death if you know about it. As far as I'm concerned, he wasn't much of a brave guy. I can't imagine that happened. And if I were investigating that case, I would look at motive. Who had the strongest motive to have him silenced? And look at the people in the jail, and look at some of these contributors who are now, these wealthy millionaires and billionaires are contributing to the president's funds and things like that. And look if there's any connection between some of them, because if they were involved with Epstein, they cannot possibly let some of these records come out. So I wish we had a neutral attorney general's office. But maybe through efforts like you and me and others and the public and all of that, there can be a groundswell of support to make sure that these documents and these videos and everything you're talking about will come out. But what you just said is the most scary thing, isn't it? That someone like Putin or whatever is going to be able to compromise what kind of truth we're going to get.
Well, of course he is. If he's got those tapes and pictures, and there's every indication that a deputy sheriff from the Palm Beach Sheriff's Department who defected to Russia and now lives there, and manages a lot of fake news websites for the Russians in the English language. He said he had those and he took them with him. That's why he defected. Because he would live the life of Riley from then on if he arrived in Russia with that material. So, you know, nobody seems to be picking up on this, but I'm aware of it. In fact, this material is in Russia. You don't hear a word about it in the media.
Oh, you don't.
You don't. And, I mean, I think someone's been hoisted on a petard, and I think it might be the President of the United States, and I'm very concerned about it. So
I think we should be.
Yeah, of course. Mark Shaw, thank you very much for being with us on Dreamland. Abuse of Power is a very powerful book. Get it and get involved. Send Mark the information he's looking for. Go get to the district attorney. Make some noise. Because if we don't speak out, our freedom dies. Our freedom dies. MarkShawBooks.com. Go for it, folks. And thank you, Mark, for being with us very much. Thank you.
It's been a great honor to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of UnknownCountry.com is Anne Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.